Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Sports Radio 610 presents Clint Sterner and the Show. Clint Sterner's Football at 4.
Clint and the Show are out. Adam Spillane, Cecil Shorts are in. And John McClain joins us for the next hour. John, good to see you. Thanks for coming in today.
Adam and Cecil, it's my pleasure. It's always great to be on with you guys. I hope you and your family had great Thanksgiving. I hope all the listeners had great Thanksgiving.
I hope you had the same. Let's jump into it, and I want to get to something that that came across earlier this week. The Pro Football Hall of Fame, the semifinalist list was announced, and Andre Johnson made the list. I believe this is his first year eligible. You're on the voting committee. Can you just kind of, it's a different process than, say, the Baseball Hall of Fame. Can you just run through how the voting goes down and just what that process is?
Yeah, there's 48 of us on the selection committee, and you have to have covered the NFL at least 10 years. We have some Hall of Famers on that committee, like James Lofton, Dan Fouts, Bill Polian, and we have a few broadcasters, mainly longtime writers like me. And I'm also on the seniors committee and the coaches committee, and take great pride in that because it's an enormous responsibility. Anybody from Houston, I promote them and present them. And I met with Andre and his agent, Kennard McGuire, about a couple months ago, and I wanted them to know exactly what the process was and what I was planning. And I told him, don't get your hopes up to get in on the first ballot. We don't put many receivers in there. We did Calvin Johnson last year. I thought he might have to wait a year or two, like Michael Irvin and Chris Carter and Terrell Owens. And the fact that Reggie Wayne and Torrey Holt have been finalists now, among the 15 finalists for the last few years. And I told him, just be patient. So the first, originally it comes out like a list of 125. Mm-hmm. And then we're asked to reduce that list to 25 semifinalists. And that's what we did. And one of the things I sent was what I thought were like five impressive things about Andre that when he retired, only he and Jerry Rice or he and Marvin Harrison had done that in NFL history. And I didn't want to put too much out there because all the voters get bombarded by so much stuff. And then I called a few of them and asked for help. And that was the key to make the list of 25, and he did, along with those receivers I mentioned, plus Hines Ward and Steve Smith. Steve Smith, another player who was eligible for the first time, and Anquan Boldin. So that's a lot of competition at wide receiver. The next one that we trimmed that list to 15 finalists for modern era players, a coach, contributor, and a senior. That's already been determined by separate committees. And then if they make the final 15, of which there can be a maximum of those of eight out of that group, that's when they get what we call in the room, where they're discussed by everybody. Mm-hmm. And like when it comes Andre's turn, I'll talk as I did for Elvin Bethea, Mike Munchak, Bruce Matthews, Warren Moon, Robert Brazil, and Curly Cole, and all Oilers. And then once I make my presentation, then others that I will recruit if they believe strongly that Andre deserves to be in there. And I wish that Tony Dungy would be somebody I would call on because he went against him twice a year. But I don't want to put him in that situation since he's going to be promoting Reggie Wayne, one of his players. So I have too much respect for him to ask him to do that when he's going to be pushing his guy as he was last year. And so then the list gets trimmed from 15 down to 10 down to the finalists, and then we vote yes or no, and we find out what everybody else does if they actually made it. This year they moved the announcement on the NFL Honors Show, which has been coming on Saturday night. Right. They're moving it to Thursday night, which I think is very smart because that'll dominate the night. When they have it on Saturday night, a lot of people are gone. And plus, that's the night they announced All-Pro team, MVP, Offensive Rookie of the Year, Defensive Rookie of the Year, Offensive Player of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year. So I'm glad that's going to be Thursday. Plus, when you announce something on Thursday, you've got, I'll say, the newspaper. That's a great day to run in the newspaper, but also online. Because if you do it on a weekend, like Super Sunday, how many people are going to be on their phone reading and watching and viewing all of that when they're getting ready for the Super Bowl? So right. I'm surprised the NFL took this long to do it. So it's a multi-step process, and this was the first one. I'm very happy for Andre, who said it was breathtaking to just be considered, and he never thought about it when he played. I'm going to say, yeah, what about all those times I talked to you at the end of his career? And which he would never really respond to it. I think he didn't want to jinx himself, but I know he's deserving of the Hall of Fame. And one of the things I have to be careful if I want to point out, when I say that he accomplished things that Jerry Rice and Marvin Harrison accomplished, I'd like to point out, and by the way, Jerry Rice played with Joe Montana and Steve Young, two Hall of Fame quarterbacks. And Marvin Harrison played with Peyton Manning. Mm-hmm. And of the receivers who have been finalists the longest, Reggie Wayne played with Peyton Manning, and Torrey Holt played with Kurt Warner, and Andre Johnson played with David Carr, Tony Banks, Sage Rosenfels, and I go down the list, Matt Schaub, and point out Matt Schaub is the best quarterback he played with.
Yeah. Do you think, I don't know if you can say this at this point, but do you have a feel for, does he make it through the semifinals into the finals this year, or is he going to have to wait a year or two?
I hope he gets to the next round, but there's so many receivers, and I believe Torrey Holt and Reggie Wayne will do it again.
Yeah.
The key is, I thought it was very interesting when the Pro Football Hall of Fame announced these semifinalists, Andre's name was just down in the middle somewhere. And Pro Football Talk had Andre Johnson, DeMarcus Ware, two of the finalists. I'm thinking, wow, that's great. And then I noticed ESPN.com had Andre in the headline, and I thought that was great. I don't know why they did it, looking at every player that is among the – it's 26 because of a tie. Usually it's 25. But I thought that's great because, you know, Steve Smith, first-time eligible, does a lot of TV, and I don't think that has anything to do with it. But to me, if you're in the public consciousness – it can be something that kind of one of the intangibles. And Andre, of course, he does some things here, but he never did things to create controversy other than when he beat up Portland Finnegan. And so he just didn't get a lot of recognition off the field, and good or bad, because of receivers in his day. If you think about Terrell Owens, Randy Moss, Chad Johnson, some of those, I used to say, those guys would pour gasoline on themselves and light a match to get attention. Andre never did it. DeAndre never did it. Mm-hmm. And I think DeAndre Hopkins has a chance to go in the Hall of Fame. I think Andre Johnson, J.J. Watt, obviously, the two top choices. And I think DeAndre, who no telling how many more years he's going to play, I think he'll have a legitimate chance. But by the time he retires, I'll be on the other side of the grass instead of on the committee.
Let me ask you this. What was one of your favorite plays or moments from Andre Johnson?
Besides him pounding
besides Courtland Finnegan.
One that I remember, we were in Washington and the Texans were playing the Redskins at FedEx Field. And I'm down in the press box in that stadium, I think was the first where they moved it down in the corner, instead of on the 50 like it had been throughout history. So we're down there in the corner, and the Redskins are winning, and the Texans are trying to rally. And Schaub threw a touchdown pass. Andre in the back of the end zone, double covered, made this incredible catch. And the Texans won. I can't remember if that's the game winner, if it fit into overtime, but considering he was down there in the corner and it was a last gasp, last ditch effort, and Schaub just threw it where he could get it, and he out jumped a couple. And he had a couple others. He had two great plays. I remember at Tennessee, I think he had a great one against Miami. But the one in Washington, because they want it. Kubiak beat Shanahan. I remember Mike Shanahan came in the dressing room afterward and to congratulate Gary. Kyle was with him. They both came in there because they're really tight with Kubiak. I think it's interesting. When I talked to Andre, he was talking about his teammates and his coaches helping him get where he is right now, and he specifically thanked Kubiak. Because when Gary came in after they had a defensive coordinator, Dom Capers, as his first coach, he said, Gary made it a big part of the game plan to give me the ball. Or Coach Kubes, that's what he called him. And when Andre was inducted in the Houston Sports Hall of Fame last year, he had Kubiak make the speech for him. And so that shows the respect they have for each other. But today, guys, it's so because of the rules. One of the things we struggle with, if you go back, say, in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, well, before 1978, you could, when the rules were, DBs were bigger, slower, and they could just use receivers all over the field. Cecil, if you can imagine, guys would pad up their forearms, and when a receiver was running across the field, they wouldn't even try to break up the pass. They would hit him in the helmet as hard as they could with a padded forearm. I've watched so many highlights of Raider games against the Steelers when what George Atkinson did to Len Swan, he'd be put in jail for today. I mean, wouldn't even be up play, be on the other side of the field. Swan's about to walk back to the huddle, and here he comes, bam, hits him in the head as hard as he can, knocks him down, concussions out for a long time. And it just was amazing. So do you take guys who have, say, 60 catches for 950 yards and 7 or 8 touchdowns over guys today where you're not supposed to do any, you can't do any of that.
Right.
And so if they have 90 catches for 13 or 1,400 yards and 12 or 13 touchdowns, to me, you know a great player. It's harder on the offensive lineman than anything. But when it comes to a receiver, and because you guys are so isolated, you can see you all over the field. And to me, it's you know a Hall of Fame receiver when you see it. Sometimes they don't get in on the first ballot. And it's like T.O. used to whine and cry because he didn't get on the first two ballots. I'm thinking neither did Chris Carter, neither did Michael Irvin. Michael Irvin's got 3 Super Bowl rings, and he didn't complain. It's not – he thought everybody was out to get him. And the fact it is, whatever the committee – They thought there were other guys that were more deserving. And so you can be deserving. And I've seen like Elvin Bethea made it at the end of his modern era eligibility. Curly Culp, Robert Brazil, they were on the seniors committee, which I'm on. Moon and Matthews made it on the first ballot. Munchak had to wait about 5 years. But it's not where somebody goes, I don't think he deserves it. It's all about who they think that year is more deserving. And I can tell you guys, the longer they wait, the sweeter it is.
He's John McClain. He'll be with us for the rest of the hour. When we come back, we will get into this year's Texans. They host the Jets on Sunday. What is he looking for the final 7 games of the season? And don't forget, at 4:40, Dear John, sending your questions to 713-572-4610 with the hashtag Dear John. He will answer those questions. It's a Football Friday. John's visit with us is presented by Horn Solutions. This is Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Clint Sterner and the show.
Clint and the show are out. They will be back on Monday. Adam Spillane and Cecil Shorts are in, and we are in with John McClain.
Let me tell you what the listeners got today. They got a big show in Adam, and they got a big-time football player for a change in Cecil. So there. If they're not listening, don't anybody tell them what I said.
Hey, Tyler, take that off the record for him.
I think I'm going to mark that one
for Monday morning. Monday afternoon. I'm sorry.
John's visit is presented by Horn Solutions. Remember, Dear John, sending your question 713-572-4610 with the hashtag Dear John, and we will answer that in the next segment. John, Texans Jets on Sunday from NRG. Before we kind of get to the game, we were talking in the last hour about the players who might be with the Texans, guys that are on the roster now who might be with the team a couple of years from now. And one of the names that we brought up was Justin Reed, who's a free agent at the end of the season. Has he, the way that he's played this season, has he solidified his spot in the organization, do you think?
Well, what I don't know, Adam, is did they try to sign him to an extension and he said no? I don't think they did. We never heard anything about it. And there's going to be a lot of people gone. I think it just depends on the money. And if he hits free agency and he's got a chance to go, say, with a playoff team, I'm pretty sure he's going to go. Now, Nick Caserio has to be careful because they can get a lot of compensatory picks for players they lose, but you can't sign more than you lose. Mm. And I know there's certain guys, Malik Collins being one. Coaches love Malik Collins. He played really well, and he's one of the reasons John Gernard has – 7 sacks in 7 games. And, you know, if they get another pass rusher, like if they miss out on Kayvon Thibodeau of Oregon, there's still a couple others that are worth top 10 pick, and they could still put him opposite Gernard and have Collins and then Roy Lopez. That'd be a good way to continue building your defense. But I'm trying to think, you know, I believe the running backs, no. They got to find some running backs next year. And settle for one. Mm-hmm. And then I don't think they're playing Brevin Jordan instead of Jordan Akins. We knew when Jordan was drafted that he's a similar player to Akins, but build, everything. Akins, 29 years old, going to last year's contract. They're not going to extend him. Mm-hmm. And so now they're playing Brevin Jordan. And as far as the offensive linemen, I don't know. They've done a better job of pass protection, and Jaron Christian Sr. has done a really good job as a pass protector in place of Laremy Tunsil, but I'm not sure about the rest of positions. Those guys struggle to run block, and they struggle to run, and you can't put, say it's Davis Mills or Tyrod Taylor comes back, or they sign another veteran, or they find some quarterback worth drafting. If you don't have a running game, you're doing a disservice to your quarterback, and they're last for the second year in a row. They got new players, new coach, new scheme, and they're terrible running the ball. Not only are they last in rushing, they're last in average per carry. And yep, that's just pathetic. And so it's asking your quarterbacks to do an awful lot. And one of the things I was going to point out here, it seems strange. This is Tyrod's first game since Jacksonville in Houston. Mm-hmm. You know, every game he's played has been on the road. And his first two games against the Jaguars and Browns, he completed 70.5%, and his rating was 122.9. Mm. In these last two, since he's come back from his hamstring injury against Miami and Tennessee, he's completed 56.7, and his rating is 52.3.
Oh, wow.
Now, I'm guessing he's going to play a whole lot better at home, mm-hmm, against the Jets. The Texans are last in offense, last in rushing, next to last in passing, and the Jets have the worst defense, and they have committed the most turnovers, and they have the worst turnover differential, minus 15. So you would think with a rookie quarterback, Zach Wilson, coming back after a 4-game absence, he has 4 touchdowns, 9 interceptions, he's been sacked 19 times, and he doesn't have his starting running back,
right,
and they don't have their best offensive tackle. Those guys are hurt, missing 2 starters in the offensive line. You'd think there'd be some interceptions there. But, you know, thinking about it means he'll come out and throw 4 touchdown passes. But the opportunity's there for them to win. And they still play the Jets, and the Jaguars are tied with them game and a half behind Detroit. I kind of think Detroit will probably end up with a top pick, and they need a pass rusher like Thibodeau. But, you know, I don't know if Kamu Grugier-Hill signed a 1 or 2 year deal. I haven't looked lately, but – that guy's made enough big plays. He deserves, yeah, to be back.
Yes, yeah.
And Eric Murray's starting to play better. He's figured out what Lovie Smith wants to do in his defense, which is play mostly zone and keep your eye on the ball. But I still think, you know, they're going to have more changes in the secondary than any other position other than running back.
I like Desmond King. He's been doing decent the last few games. Let me ask you about Roy Lopez. He has been really impressive, but how impressive has he been to you? And then what does that say that Nick can find a guy in the sixth round that's been a starter for nine games this year?
Brooks Cabina, who covers the Texans with me, has a really in-depth story on Roy Lopez. It'll be in Sunday's Chronicle, but it's out online right now, TexasSportsNation.com, that just kind of goes over his career, why they like him so much. And they played a lot of defensive linemen. Well, they played a lot of players on defense. It's like now they're just starting to figure out who we need to play and how much. But injuries have kind of told that tale too. But they love Lopez. Now, he's not a great pass rusher, but he's good run stuffer. Mm-hmm. And they're 31st against the run. Last year they were 32, but they're giving up 30-something yards less a game, and I think he's a reason for that. And, you know, they got injuries in the line and at linebacker, but Lopez's improvement, as the coaches and players say, has been so impressive. You know, son of a coach, former state wrestling champion, knows how to stay low, get leverage. I could see he and Collins being the tackles, Grenard at left end, and a number one pick, a high number one pick at right end. And that'd be that would benefit the secondary so much.
Gruje Hill signed a one-year deal.
Okay, well, there's another guy I'd want back. And it just depends on the money. They're gonna have money. But when you know you have a rebuild, it's not going to be over after 1 year. I don't think this team's going to show much of improvement till maybe 2023. And by then, I don't think they're going to the playoffs. Just like the Rockets, you know, it's not a one-year turnaround. Mm-hmm. You know, they're the worst team. Texans are one of the worst teams, and it's for a reason. These things take time.
We were talking about this earlier in the show. They drafted three guys after the fourth round. Garrett Wallow, Roy Lopez, and then also Brevin Jordan. It feels like all three of those guys will be on the team next year. So would you say Nick Caserio's first draft, was that a success?
Well, I think we're not going to be able to tell that now. I mean, those guys could bomb out next year, but and Nico Collins, you know, Nico Collins has done well. He's flashed. And it's hard. And Cecil, you know this. People talk about positions that are hard. You know, nothing's like playing quarterback, but right. So many receivers take time to develop because they're not just running routes like college, and they have players that are so much better, faster, bigger, stronger, tougher than they faced in college. They have a lot on their mind mentally and physically that they have adjusted to. And I think Collins, they're impressed with what he's done with that, and they like him a lot. Where they are right now, Adam, I'd say, yeah, for not having first and second round picks, I think this rookie class looks pretty good, and I can't wait to see what Caserio can do, not only with all his picks. I think he has 9 right now next year, and what he can get in the Watson trade. You know, the Giants, see, they have scored fewer touchdowns since the start of the 2020 season than any team in the league, and they're the worst in the red zone. Daniel Jones, you know, it's his third year. Will they be ready to move on from him? If they do, they should go after Deshaun Watson. Right now, they'd have 2 of the top 7 picks. So, I don't expect, like, Philadelphia wanted him. Philadelphia, and he rejected Philadelphia. Philadelphia has, it looks like, because Wentz stays healthy, they're going to have 3 number ones. Now, they wouldn't trade them all in 1 year for Watson, but the way Jalen Hurts has been playing, they're averaging over 200 yards a game rushing in the last 4 games. I don't know if he can keep that up because, you know, a quarterback's got to be able to pass the ball. But I would think the Giants, we're going over the other day, teams need quarterbacks. Maybe Pittsburgh, maybe Seattle. Denver, yes. Carolina, yes. Miami, looks like it. And so maybe there'll be a team out there besides the Dolphins that he'll tell them, I'll go to them, and maybe that team will be interested.
John's visit with us is brought to you by Horn Solutions. It's a Football Friday, 713-572-4610. Text us with the hashtag DearJohn to get your questions in during the next segment. And I also want to bring up with John, the Jets are in Houston on Sunday.
We're getting closer to the 30-year anniversary of another very famous Jets game in Houston. We'll talk about that next on Sports Radio 610.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Clint Sterner and the show.
Clint and the show are out. We've got one more segment with John. His visit with us is brought to you by Horn Solutions. Remember, text 713-572-4610 with the hashtag Dear John. Get your questions in to John McClain. But first, you got the Jets here, John, this weekend on Sunday. And we're coming up. It's not there yet, but we're almost at 30 years since the very famous Jets-Oilers game when Buddy Ryan punched Kevin Gilbride on the sidelines.
I was there.
I want you to go back. What was it like after the game? I don't remember. Tell me, it was well known that he had punched him on the sidelines. The cameras caught it.
He never touched him. Curtis Duncan.
He threw it, though.
He threw it, and Curtis Duncan, receiver, stepped in there. Kevin Gilbride would have torn Buddy Ryan a new one, and they better be glad Curtis Duncan stepped in on that. But that had been building all season because Buddy constantly ripped the offense and run and shoot, calling it a chuck and duck. And the coaches had to do weekly talk shows on KTRH. And Buddy came on the night before, and he would rip the offense. Then Kevin comes on there. All the listeners are calling, well, Buddy said this. What do you think about it? So it built up because Buddy was old school. He did not like – he wanted a fullback. He wanted a tight end. He wanted to be able to run the ball when you had a lead. And they had a 1,000-yard rusher that year, 93. And they were great. They knocked out 11 quarterbacks. Their defense with Buddy, they were great, and they had knocked out 11. And so they play the Jets here. Boomer Esiason's the quarterback. They shut him out. Boomer's like ducking as soon as the ball snapped. And right before halftime, we're in the Astrodome press box, and Bob West from the Port Arthur News sat on the front row, probably about 10 seats from me, and there was a TV right above his head for replays. And so it's over, and Bob stands up and says, did you guys see that? See what? Chris Berman just said, when we come back for the break, we're going to show you a fight on the sideline you're not going to believe. So instead of running back to the back of the press box, get a hot dog and a soft drink, we all crowded around that TV, and Chris Berman came back, and he set it up. And we couldn't tell exactly what happened other than Buddy went after him. And so at that point, their media relations director, Chip Namias, had to go get the president, Steve Underwood. They had to go meet with Bud. Okay, what's going to be our reaction to this? And Bud's like, what? And they told him, he hadn't seen it. He said, we can't ignore it because the media is going to make a big deal out of it. It was such a big deal under the circumstances. They shut out the Jets. It was their, 11th consecutive victory. Made them 12-4, won the division. Got a first-round bye. Next game would be at the Dome. Turned out against Kansas City. So I remember the Chronicle. We had 10 people there, and 9 of them did stuff just on that, and I did the game. And we had to be like a team. Okay, you do this, this, this. And my wife, who was getting taped for KTRH, everybody went and chased Kevin Gilbride afterward. Bud had told him, tell him no comment. Don't talk. And Buddy talked around it. It was so funny. Instead of saying no comment, he talked around it, and it was great. And because he knew Bud wasn't going to fire him. And so Kevin tried to get away, and all the media chased him in the parking lot. And my wife, Carol, said he was so discombobulated being chased. Plus, there were fans out there screaming at him, Kevin, Kevin, what happened? He couldn't find his truck. So they had to find his truck for him. And then the next day, you know, by then it had gone national. It now was social media. It would have been national that night. So the next day, Kevin wouldn't talk about it because they told him not to. Buddy talked in riddles about it and got all the pub again. And, of course, it was a great season. It's not like that was their 11th loss in a row, but it was the most tumultuous season I've ever seen. I do a weekly show in Las Vegas. And a friend of mine asked me on the air this year, because Gruden had been fired, resigned. Henry Ruggs had the wreck. And then Damon Arnett they cut because he's threatening to kill people on the web. He said, have you ever seen a season that's wilder than this? I said, yes, I have. I said, you had a defensive tackle who blew his brains out during the season. Said you had an offensive tackle refused to go to a game because he wanted to be present for the birth of his baby. which was called Baby Gate, and it transcended sports. And then you had Buddy Ryan and Kevin Gilbride, and they made a 30 out of that.
NFL Network did.
They could have. Yeah, what is it? They a football life.
Mm-hmm. Football life.
They could have done. They interviewed me for an hour. They could have. They could have done a series on that season. It was unbelievable.
Would you have taken a punch for your offensive coordinator?
Depends how much I'm getting the ball.
Well, Curtis Duncan, who is a prominent, let's see, Curtis is a CPA here, very prominent, big with charities. He was a Pro Bowl receiver, so he was getting the ball. There's four receivers in the run and shoot, and Warren Moon spread it around. So I would expect Curtis to defend his offensive coordinator.
There you go.
Like a good receiver should.
713-572-4610 with the hashtag Dear John. We'll take your questions for him in the next few minutes. We were talking about David Culley during the break, and I just want to know what you've seen from him. You started covering him, I guess, in January or February. How have you seen him grow into the job of being a head coach over the last 10 months?
Well, David Culley, after 27 years as an assistant coach, never as a coordinator, never had an interview, and Nick Caserio hired him, and the McNairs, Cal McNair, signed off on it, and they knew the team was going to be bad. You're never going to say your team's going to be bad.
Right.
I have people tell me all the time, well, why don't they just admit they're rebuilding? Why don't they say we don't have any talent? I'm like, give me a break. You don't say stuff like that. And David, who's attitude is very contagious. He's mm-hmm. very energetic. He is so honest. I can't tell you how much I respect David Culley, the kind of man he is, the life he's led, and what he's overcome to get to this point. And I get people ask me, is he going to be one and done? I said, if he was, it'd be grossly unfair based on what they've stuck him with. And if Tyrod Taylor had been playing the whole season, do we think they'd want a couple more games?
Yeah,
I do. And so I don't think that's fair. So get some more talent in here through the draft. And David doesn't, he keeps up with what's going on with Tim Kelly and Pep Hamilton, and he tells them what he thinks they should do, but he doesn't get in the way of play calling. He doesn't interfere with Lovie Smith on his calls on his defense or Frank Ross on special teams. He oversees it, which is what a coach should do. I've never liked a coach that call plays. The game is too hard. The clock management,
yeah.
The situational football, it's so hard to keep up with everything. And then if you're calling plays and during games, you know, he's made some mistakes on strategy, mm-hmm. on decisions, and he's come back and told us, hey, you know, I would change that. He hadn't tried to be hard-headed about it. O'Brien, every coach is like this except Culley. They get so mad when you question their clock management or their in-game decisions. One time O'Brien, I can't remember what I wrote. He wouldn't talk to me for like half the season. Finally did, and he said, you bleepers in the media, you think you know this clock management. You guys haven't had to be down there on the sideline. And they all just like so defensive. Mm. Matt Hammond, who used to be on this station, asked Andy Reid, who was notorious for screwing up decisions during a game till he won a Super Bowl, till he got Patrick Mahomes. He asked Andy about his bad clock management on a conference call. And Andy, I could see the steam coming over the phone line. Oh, my goodness, he was mad. But Culley is very graceful, dignified. You know, I hope he wins some more games and people get fired up about next season when they're going to have more talent. But the players, if you watch the end of the game, they were going over to him, putting their arm around him, yeah, on the sideline, because
yeah,
that game they won it 2 hours from where he grew up in Sparta. He played quarterback at Vandy, where you can imagine the racism he underwent when he played quarterback in the SEC, and his family and friends were there. And so tried to get him after the game to talk about it, but he wanted to make it all about the players. Mm. Ask if he got a game ball. No, we got a team game ball. Asked Tyrod Taylor, how come y'all don't give him a game ball? You did after he beat Jacksonville. And he said the leadership council will get together, mm-hmm, and do something for coach. But that's just the kind of guy Culley is. He doesn't take credit. And I would think, it's like he said, he's still learning. There's a lot of, anytime anybody does something for the first time, you're not going to do it as well as the second time.
All right.
Do you feel like he has improved in the game management stuff? Can you get a feel for that?
Well, he didn't have any problems on Sunday, did he?
No,
isn't it amazing? You win a game, you don't have any problems. You lose games, you do have problems.
There you go.
You know, we talked about this earlier in the show about coaches taking credit and coaches making it about themselves. When you hear John say how he didn't make a big deal at all about how he, you know, went into Tennessee and won the game and, you know, the whole game ball thing, how much do you think that endeared him to the rest of the locker room?
To be honest, he's a social relational guy that is not surprising. So I think the guys, when you have a coach like that, and I had one guy like that in Jacksonville named Gus Bradley, same way, loved the players. The players loved him. We played our all for him because he felt like he cared about us. He was very genuine. He was very, almost like a college coach type feel. And I mean, that's what you get when you got a position coach. You're a position coach for 20-plus years. You have that room, and you're with the receivers 24/7. You love on the guys. You can build that relationship. And he's doing that with the whole team. So the whole team feels what that one room used to get. It's a really big deal. When you have that, they rally around him.
Fans get so upset when a coach says, I got to do a better job of coaching. And I tell them, he's not saying that for you. He's saying that for the players. The players appreciate it when a coach takes the blame instead of trying to blame them. And Cully's very honest about things. And like, if Tyrod didn't play well, he'll say he didn't play well, but he says it in a constructive manner in which it doesn't, like, infuriate him or embarrass him. And I think people appreciate that honesty. It's refreshing. He'll say things to us in the media room, and when he's through, we'll look. Or, can you imagine O'Brien saying that or O'Brien reacting that way? No.
All right, let's go ahead and get to the questions for Dear John.
Let's kick off the weekend by asking the most respected Houston sports writer of all time anything you want. Submit your questions to the text line 713-572-4610. Include hashtag Dear John, along with name and city. And for today's Dear John, let's open up the mailbag.
All right, first question. Dear John, when will Stephen Silas be fired?
I have hard enough time keeping up with the Texans, much less the Rockets. Hey, he's won two games, just like David Culley. Who's going to win three quicker, the Rockets or the Texans? The fact is, those guys are rebuilding. They're constantly changing their roster and their lineup. I think people should cut them a slack until expectations are higher.
All right, next question. Dear John, next year will Tim Kelly be fired, and will they overhaul the entire offense?
I don't think Kelly will be fired. I think he'll leave. I think that Tim was kept this year because Watson, he is tight with Watson, and Watson said he wanted him kept, and they did. I think next year Tim will be wherever Bill O'Brien is. And I think there's a good chance Pep Hamilton will be the coordinator.
That was going to be my next question. How do you think that Kelly has done this year?
With this offense, they're worst in the league, the worst running game. But he played a rookie quarterback that wasn't ready to play. They didn't want to play him that early, and he didn't select his running backs. He didn't select his offensive line. So it's impossible to judge Tim Kelly when you don't have any more talent.
713-572-4610. Include the hashtag Dear John. We will get to your questions. Dear John, what would be your first four draft pick positions next year? Not names, the positions.
Well, of course, it depends on the player, but they need another pass rusher to play opposite Grenard, and they don't need a tackle unless they lose Malik Collins. So I would say a pass rusher, number one, an offensive tackle. If they're going to keep Titus Howard at guard, I still think Titus should have been at right tackle, but they've got to do better in their offensive line. And I think an impact defensive back, whether it was a corner or a safety, that would be the top three. Number four, and I'm not saying you don't do this, say those were first, second, third round, they got to get a running back. They got to get a legitimate running back who, if he doesn't have holes, he can make holes.
Dear John, will the Texans' top two quarterbacks next year be Tyrod Taylor and Davis Mills?
Davis Mills will be. Tyrod signed a one-year contract. Would he want to sign a one-year contract and come back here if they told him, we're going to give Davis a chance, we want to watch him for another season while we build around quarterback, and if he doesn't show a lot of improvement, we're going to try to fill that position next year? Or does he want to move again. You know, he may be tired of moving. You know, he gets along really well with Cully, who coached him at Buffalo, and Pep Hamilton, who coached him with the Chargers. I'd like to see him. I still want to see Davis Mills at the end of this year. So I don't know what Tyrod's thinking. So why not? I know they love the guy. He'll be a coach when his career's over.
Dear John, is there any chance the Deshaun Watson saga blends into next year?
Boy, if it does, I think Deshaun wants to go through this next year. I can't imagine he wouldn't. He wouldn't try to reach settlements with his 22 accusers. I was told by sources that he thought it was an admission of guilt. And so by the time the Miami deal was so close, and then Stephen Ross, the owner, said, I want the lawsuits cleared up. And so he waited so long before the deadline, and they just couldn't get it done. Well, now they got months to get it done, and I hope for the sake of his 22 accusers that they get exactly what they believe they deserve, and I hope Watson gets traded for multiple picks so we don't have to talk about it anymore.
Dear John, is Dave Aranda staying at Baylor?
Yes, he's working on a new contract, and I want to thank all the media for spreading all those rumors that he's going to USC, Washington, or LSU, or Little Brothers of the Poor High School somewhere, and then now Baylor's going to give him millions and millions more.
Dear John, who's going to win the Super Bowl?
Oh, boy. You know, I don't know what y'all think right now, but if I had to pick a best team in AFC, I'm taking the Chiefs. They're on a roll. Their defense is playing better than it played in the past. And if I look at the NFC, for the Cardinals to go 2-1 with Colt McCoy, with Kyler Murray out and DeAndre Hopkins out, I hope they get in the Super Bowl. I hope somehow J.J. Watt can come back in the playoffs like he did here. And then Hopkins will be in there. I'd love to see those guys get to go to the Super Bowl for the first time. So I'm going to say Cardinals over the Packers.
No Patriots.
No, I don't think with a rookie quarterback you're going to the Super Bowl.
John, thanks so much for coming in today.
Guys, thank you very much for having me. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody. And my good buddy Gary Horn, sick 'em.
That was John McClain. His appearance with us today was brought to you by Horn Solutions. We've got one more hour left to go on our show today before we get to the weekend. When we come back, we will have the 5 o'clock fire. This is Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610.